Guess what I brought for us? Some Portuguese tarts from Sweet Bellum.
Tear-soaked Portuguese tarts. So sales got lost on the way to my house because she was trying to deliver some things to a house nearby but then got totally lost in a flap. So she's turned up on my doorstep just going, oh, I don't know where I am.
It was like
with tarts.
It was like that frustrated, angry crying where it just all gets too difficult and so you just go and just lose it.
I love that. And it often happens, that sort of thing, when you're moving house and you're just like organising things and then weirdly the thing that tips you over the edge into a kind of shrieking, sobbing frenzy or something completely tiny. And I suspect that if you hadn't decided to pick up some Portuguese custard tarts, you'd be fine right now.
It was the stopping for the tarts that caused the problem because I was on the way to my friend George and Derek's house to drop something off and stopped to get the tarts and it just threw the routine. And then so I missed the turn off and it's a part of Sydney where there's train tracks, rivers, once you're sort of off the only route
and
that you know.
And Parramatta Road, which is just like...
So I've been sitting here with an ice pack on my face because I'm one of those people, because I've got freckly skin and red hair, that once, even if I have only a small cry, I swell up to the point where my eyes are nearly closed. So I've walked in and Crab's gone, Jesus, do you need an ice pack? I look like I've not slept in days.
The thing is that I've even baked, so you didn't even need to get tarts. I should have probably have briefed you about that.
I just had a bit of your baking, which was a ginger cake with pumpkin in it, you said.
Yeah.
Delicious.
So have a look under my kitchen table there. See, look at that.
Oh, yeah.
I've got so many pumpkins left over from Halloween because a friend very kindly bought about 5 or 6 pumpkins and brought them around for the children to carve.
Oh, yeah.
But they're like full Queensland blue. Like you couldn't carve them.
You needed a chainsaw.
So I have been – everything that I cook has pumpkin in it at the moment. And actually – I'm falling in love with the vegetable all over again, I got to say, Sales.
It's a great vegetable.
So you know the annoying thing about pumpkin, particularly the Queensland blue? I don't know if it's just because it's a Queensland pumpkin that it's sort of intractable and flinty and irritating, but like peeling one of those – sorry, that's for you, love.
Wow, you know how to kick a girl when she's down, right? My brain's so frazzled I don't even have an appropriate comeback. I'm just like,
Put another ice pack. Anyway, so
shove one ice back up your clacker, Mrs.
So what I'm doing now is I'm just chopping them in half, not, you know, like equatorially, but like sort of up and down.
Right.
You know, not, you know, like just chopping them down the middle.
Right.
And then putting them face down on a baking tray with a bit of baking paper and then just roasting them like that.
Yum, and eating them with a spoon. Getting stuff out and then
just put a straw in it for the kids. They love it. They love it. But then you just scoop the flesh out so you don't have to actually peel it and chop your fingers off and go to emergency.
And for half a pumpkin, how long do you roast it for to get the whole thing soft?
Oh, about an hour at like sort of 170 fan forced.
Okay.
Yeah, and so it's just lovely. And and so the things that I have made with pumpkin pulp in the last 2 weeks are, do you want the list?
Yep.
Okay. So I've made pumpkin spice cookies, which are these beautiful, chewy, soft I just Googled the recipe and there's a bunch there because the Americans are mad for this sort of thing, particularly this time of year. So chewy and tasty. I'll make them for you at some point. I've made this gingerbread, which is like a sticky gingerbread. It's sort of based on the Nigella Lawson sticky gingerbread recipe, which I've carried on endlessly about before. And in my desperation to use the pumpkin, I just put a cup of pumpkin pulp in and twiddled some other ingredients. And it's incredibly delicious, kind of like dense and sticky. And it works really well with the spices.
I can attest to that. It is absolutely beautiful.
Yeah, so that's going in the cookbook. Basically, this cookbook is due in about a week, so everything's going in the cookbook. Pumpkin scones I made. And geez, Flo Bjelke-Peterson was onto something. You know, that is a good scone.
Okay, so what is the – because, you know, everyone's got their secret. Some people put a lemonade or soda water in their scones and some people do
– yogurt. I'm a yogurt lady.
Is that and is that what is in the Flo Bjelke-Peterson recipe?
No, that's not in the – no. If I'm doing a plain scone, yogurt every time.
Right, interesting.
A lighter – I mean, you still use butter, but less of it, and then you basically – moisten it with yogurt. Oh my gosh, so good.
Okay.
But the pumpkin scone does not rely on yogurt, although you probably could incorporate yogurt. It's a good idea.
I want to eat my tart, but it's going to be noisy because they're so crispy. So what I want to do is just show people how crispy it is and then I feel like I can eat it with impunity. So listen to this.
Thanks, Heston. Oh, yeah. Hey, that reminds me of something awesome that I saw online the other day. I'm currently pioneering a roast mushroom cannelloni where you put the I've got a care package of it right here for you for your lunch. Best. And so instead of like doing, you know, with cannelloni, do you ever have trouble like stuffing the stuffing into those little bloody tubes?
I've never made it for that reason.
It's just, it seems like a global conspiracy. Like how do you actually do it? I guess you'd need a piping bag to do it properly. But then if you've got like spinach and ricotta or something, like it gets stuck in the piping bag. I mean, it's just, the whole thing's a giant faff. And I don't understand how restaurants can get their cannelloni looking so neat, because basically I'm cramming it in with two teaspoons and it smears everywhere and it looks disgusting. I just end up being people, like you in your car, just sobbing.
Do people when they make it, do it, first of all, on a flat piece of pasta and then do the rolling at the end?
Well, this is what I'm doing now, is getting fresh lasagna and I've made a kind of roasted pumpkin, a roasted mushroom one and ricotta. So you spread it with a ricotta mix and then you roast up all mushrooms and then with like lemon zest and thyme and garlic and stuff. And then you just kind of like vitamize the mushrooms so that it's like a paste, spread it over the lasagna sheet and then roll it up so it's like a spiral and then cut it and then I stack them into the tin like standing up like little soldiers.
Yeah. Okay.
Because that way you get the kind of crunchy end bits that form. And then I started thinking about the crunchy part of the lasagna, which is that famous dish by, what's his name? Massimo Bottura.
Yeah,
Massimo Bottura, number one chef in the world last year. And the Times has got this awesome video that they made with him. And it's just, if you just search the crunchy part of the lasagna, Massimo Bottura, like at the top of the search results. But they've got him in this like sound studio and they've filmed him making this dish, which is of course this hilariously deconstructed, delicious looking thing. But it captures all the sounds of him cooking to just a perfect sound quality, which neither of us would understand. But, yeah. And then at the end, he just takes a bite of this incredibly crunchy sort of cheesy pasta wafer that he's made. And then he just says, the only line of the whole video, he says, "How does that make you feel?" That's so good. Anyway, I saw that by accident the other day.
I loved on that episode of the Chef's Table that Massimo Bottura was in, they go to some place where they're trying parmesan, parmigiano.
Oh, I love that bit. Hang on a sec.
Parmigiano Reggiano. You just wanted to eat it so much because the cheesemaker's just, you know, unwrapping it and carving off bits and they're just going, oh, you just know it would have been so delicious.
And the look of excitement on his face as well when they bring down these like special giant wheels of parmesan. He's just in love.
Beside himself. Hey, speaking of Chef's Table, after Christmas I'm going to New York for a week.
Oh, God damn it.
Guess where I'm going to eat? Blue Hill Farm.
Oh, wow.
Which is episode 2 of The Chef's Table.
So you're going to go there and just have a carrot.
Yeah. Well, look, I found that episode really riveting and I'm staying in a hotel not far from Blue Hill Farm, New York. So not the actual farm that's, you know, upstate New York, wherever it is, the one in Manhattan. Mm-hmm. And so when I watched that, I just thought, look, you know, it's all just looks like he is serving raw vegetables. How delicious can it be? And everyone's going, well, it's delicious. And so I just want to see, maybe I'm just about to be scammed for, you know, $150 for a meal. I'm just like, that is just a raw carrot.
So this guy's got a farm and he this is a chef who concentrates on ingredient quality and has this like incredible restaurant where we just serve a tomato or a carrot, but it's the most essence of carrotiness carrot ever.
It could
just ruin you for all carrots.
Yeah, that's right. I'll be never able to eat a carrot again.
Yeah.
Hey, I've got a bit of a clang. Elton John.
Get out. Now, of course, I've been buried in cookbook, you know, panic for several weeks now, so I have not watched one bit of television. So this has been on television, has it?
It has. So
did you play the piano with him, you shocking hussy?
No way I would touch a piano in front
and yet,
of Elton
Tim Minchin, spotty enough for you to join on the keys, apparently. Take note,
less intimidated by Tim than by Elton.
That's a bit of a bitch slap, really, isn't it?
Look, the thing about Elton, so he's brought out it was really interesting. He's had the same songwriting partner for his whole career, Bernie Taupin. And Elton does
Bernie Taupin. That's so good. He obviously kept his original name, but like wasn't what was Elton John's?
Reginald Dwight was Elton's name.
Phil Boyd Studge.
But so they've Elton does only the music and Bernie does only the lyrics. And Elton says he doesn't even care what the lyrics mean. So people will say, well, what's, you know, Daniel about? Elton's like, I don't know, and I don't care. He just does the music. And anyway, for whatever reason, they don't do anything in the same room. They hardly spend time together. Just fascinating. But so they've brought out a because it's 50 years of their songwriting partnership.
So does Elton write the music first? And
no,
then
Bernie writes the lyrics. Bernie writes the lyrics. Really? And then Elton does the music, yeah.
Is that a weird way to – I mean, like, as a person with a musical brain in their body.
I would think writing the lyrics first would be easier because wouldn't that then suggest a form for the music? That's what I would think, but I don't know.
You may as well be barking at me right now. I don't know.
I'm sure people would do it both ways, right, no doubt. I mean, I'm sure people would, you know, probably like I'd love to know, say, the Bee Gees when they came up with the Staying Alive riff, you know, was someone just noodling around and came up with that and they went, oh, we'll just make a whole song around that. I'm sure that stuff would happen all the time too. Anyway, so the album is like a best of to celebrate 50 years of their creative partnership. And I mean, it just...
Are they planning to actually meet? Celebrate?
They might have a cleansing ale to celebrate. No, it was... I mean, we went through sort of and got lots of archive stuff of Elton, you know, went at the start of his career. It was just amazing to watch. Like, what a performer. But also just the body of material. My God. Like, just song after song after great song after great song. Anyway, his like with all of these sorts of people, often their minders are more officious than what they actually are. So there's a million, you know, rules about you got to do this and got to do that. But
was there anything cool about, like, you know, don't look him in the eye or,
no,
you know, don't
nothing like
mention
that.
Any month with an R in it or anything like that?
But it was a week that
what
my
was
brother
the writer like. Did he demand kittens? Like,
no.
We're cutting back, so only $50,000 worth of flowers.
It's usually like, here's what we want for the lighting. There's someone I'm interviewing next week. I won't say who yet, but in case it doesn't come off. But it's the time limit's 10 minutes. Interview must be done standing up and must not be lit. It just has to be available lighting. So it's a very, very big celebrity. I'm looking very forward to clanging about. But anyway, so Elton, it happened that it was a week when my brother happened to be visiting from Queensland. And so I said, why don't we see if we can, do you want to come to Elton John? I'll see if I can smuggle you in. He was like, oh, the bloke's, he's a genius. Yeah, absolutely. I totally want to go to that. So my brother Glenn, who's gigantic, six foot four.
He's tricky to disguise.
He's very hard to disguise.
This is our new gaffer.
Red hair, covered in tats. So he came in as like my security. So he was in the room, but then right before we rolled, one of Elton's people came in because they'd asked us to keep numbers to a minimum.
Right, okay.
And came in and went, there seems to be a lot of people in this room.
No giant hulking police officers.
Yeah, that's right. Can we get rid of somebody? We're like, nope, sorry, everyone here is absolutely necessary. Anyway, Glenn was just absolutely thrilled. And Elton was like... A lot of those people who they just know how to, because they're just old pros and old entertainers, they just know how to give a good interview, tell good anecdotes and be entertaining. And then when you cut it together with some clips from their career and looking just awesome in the 70s, it was such a pleasure. And he was nice, and so it was good because I left with my fandom intact. So,
oh God, what a relief.
Yes, it was very, very good. Hey, you know how we were talking about assholes at night?
Yeah. Sorry, I can't stop sniggering. It's a real snigger trigger, that whole thing now. And I'm sure the book is wonderful, but I probably will never read it because it's like making bunts. You know, I went into that kitchen shop, the chef and the cook, in Camberdown. And I love that shop. It's so awesome because it's just got everything that you don't really need but walk out with because
awesome.
It's just a
love
trap.
It too.
And it also stocks that amazing pistachio paste stuff, which is you could just drink by the gallon if it didn't cost as much as, you know.
Over the past month I have
pollen.
Eaten a whole jar of that with a teaspoon.
Yeah, so good.
It's awesome.
But I went in there and Michael, who runs it, who's just like lovely, and I'm like, I need a bigger bunt. I'm just going...
I reckon when we write a Chat 10 book, we should have a chapter called Smug Bunts.
Yes.
Or we could do a whole book on Smug Bunts.
Yes.
I always feel embarrassed now because he knows who I am now, and I just feel like whenever I go in there, I buy stuff that I absolutely 100% do not need, like new measuring spoons or something, because I just go, oh, these look so nice, must have them. And so then I end up, you know, spending $20 on something I don't need.
You just correctly identified the business model.
Yeah, exactly.
Welcome aboard.
So
anyway, so...
So assholes at night put me into a bit of a My culture consumption in the past fortnight has been a real rabbit warren sort of principle, which is – no, not rabbit warren. What's it called when you do like one thing leads to another thing, leads rabbit to another thing?
Yeah.
I don't know. But what?
Hang on. Wormhole? There is a word. We use it all the time.
We
can't remember.
Yeah. But it's like, you know, where you sort of just keep following this path.
Yeah.
So
spiral.
Spiral. I don't know. Anyway, so, look, dude, it's clear based on my morning that my brain is at full capacity.
Can't wait to see your interview tonight.
Oh, God.
Excellent.
What could possibly go wrong? So I watched The Way We Were.
Oh. You really are moving house.
Which was... Look, it was actually a little bit sad to watch it after Our Souls at Night because, you know, The Way We Were, I just got a glimpse of the way
Robert...
I just
love how you're pronouncing it, Our Souls at Night. Our Souls at Night.
Sorry. Our Souls at Night. Because I just got a glimpse of the way Robert Redford is now. And so The Way We Were seemed particularly poignant to see young Robert Redford. The Way We Were is... I mean, I love Barbara Streisand. I mean, I know that that'll be the biggest surprise that's ever come out of my mouth for you. But I do. But that film, her character is so annoying. I would have had to split up with her as well.
Yeah, right.
She'd be pretty hard work.
Fair cop.
Anyway, so then.
How do you feel about Yentl?
I loved Yentl.
Like,
Papa, can you hear me?
Oh, my God.
Papa, can you see me?
No.
I love Mandy Patinkin too.
A fire hose. This really clear mental image of me just like desperately plunging and getting a fire extinguisher and just like spraying you with foam.
The least you can do to let me cheer myself up is sing a few numbers. So hang on, sorry, what's going to say? Yeah, so I mentioned on the Chat 10 Facebook group, might as well just get our plugs in.
Yeah.
If you like us, go to our website, www.chat10.com. Go to our Facebook group. Just look for chat10.com. Go to our Twitter, chat10looks3. You know where to find it all. Yeah. Just jump on there. Mentioned it on the Facebook group that I was watching The Way We Were. A heap of people said you need to watch Barefoot in the Park.
Right, okay.
Which was young Robert Redford and young Jane Fonda.
Oh, get out.
Get out. Okay. So seeing them together, having also watched Our Souls at Night. And it was what I would call... screwball comedy.
Okay.
I didn't love it. I thought it seemed a bit dated and by contemporary standards a little bit slow.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, young Jane Fonda was just adorable.
Yeah.
And young Robert Redford was great and did have some good moments. The premise is basically a young couple's just gotten married and they move into a flat that's just an absolute disaster. There's a kooky guy who lives upstairs and they are sort of trying to set up Jane Fonda's mum with him. Chaos ensues. So yeah, lots of people in the Chat 10 Facebook group really loved it, but I thought it was okay. But if you don't mind, if I can just keep rolling with this monologue.
Okay, I'll just periodically try and derail you as per usual.
Because I then started following, so I did The Way We Were, so then it put me on a bit of a Babs thing as well. Alec Baldwin on Here's the Thing recently did an interview with Barbara Streisand.
No!
Which
I haven't listened
great.
To Alec Baldwin for a little bit. I've better scramble back there.
Look, I enjoyed it, although it was a little bit, because they're both very well-known Democrats, it was a bit of a mutual therapy session about Donald Trump what's going on in America. But my favourite bit was that...
Wasn't Babs one of the ones that was going to go to Canada and never did?
Probably.
Yeah,
she,
I reckon she
that type,
routinely
yeah.
threatened to go to Canada during the, I think, both Bush presidencies.
There was a lot of...
Canada never saw any Babs.
There was a lot of anecdotes of her, like, you know, I rang Hillary and I said, you need to do this. Or, you know, I said to Obama, but are you tough enough? And, you know, like...
Can you imagine, like, being an American president or a presidential candidate be just, like, batshit crazy enough? But imagine every now and again just getting a call from Babs. Like, you just... It'd be enough to make you just throw in the towel.
Just
be like getting rung by Paul Keating if you're anything in the Labor Party.
You'd be like, Mr. President, Barbara Streisand's on the phone again. He probably had someone who was, like, Barbara Streisand liaison. She's probably rich enough and gives enough that you've got to talk to her. You probably have to take her call.
What was that great story of Marina Hyde's? When she used to work at The Sun as a kind of gossip columnist, she tells this story to talk about the pervasiveness and the nature of Rupert Murdoch's editorial kind of influence over newspapers, his newspapers. She said, it's not a question of being given a directive all the time. It's just like the second guessing of the lieutenants that makes it, you know, a very pervasive sort of power structure. And she tells this story about how she wrote some gossip item once about Barbara Streisand, but her editor spiked it on the grounds that somebody recalled having once seen a Barbara Streisand CD on Murdoch's desk, like in his bookshelf. Like, no, he really loves Streisand. Like,
classic. Yeah, but Alec, the bit
derailment,
the bit that
yeah,
was
now
funny
where were you, hey?
Oh, Babs just kept talking about food and how much she likes Baldwin. Eating and how, you know, so I forget what the film was. It was a certain film she wanted to be skinny. She's like, but I just couldn't stop eating. Oh, it was Yentl. She said, we were filming in Poland or somewhere and the food was delicious and I had caterers bring in the food and so I just kept eating and eating. And then they're recording it at, it sounds like, her place, and then her maid servant brings in miso soup, and you can hear them both slurping it.
Oh,
it's
my
just,
God.
It's classic. And they're both, because, you know, Alec Baldwin likes eating as well, so they talk a bit about that. Anyway, it was one of those ones where Alec...
use that podcast as rage therapy for Republicans. Can you imagine? And now they're drinking miso soup!
Couldn't have been worse if it's... And we've put some, you know, here's some kale juice. But it was one of those classics of the Alec genre, which is... someone that he knows reasonably well and they sort of bang on in a way that you feel like you're just listening to their actual conversation, yeah. Which is a bit of a strange conversation and two gigantic egos. Like the whole conversation's like, you know, Alec says, well, I blah, blah, blah. And Babs replies with, well, I blah, blah, blah. Well, I blah, blah, blah. Just I, me.
Alternating monologues.
Yeah, speaking of which.
Do you remember that one that he did with Anthony Weiner? I'm sorry, we've talked about this before, but I often think of that one as a really classic example of Baldwin. He's like quite deferential to his guests and polite. So he was, he talked to Weiner about like New York planning regulations for about 30 minutes before he got round to, hey, so about this little hobby.
And at the end it was like Alec sort of counselling about how to get his career back
That's
on
right.
track.
I
and
know.
It was such a sort of meeting of strange minds.
I know, so weird. So
Weiner's in jail now.
Yeah, I know. Far out.
What have you been up to?
Well, cooking, crying, that sort of thing. But actually, no, I've got out and done a bunch of nice things that I don't normally get to do. I went to Brisbane to do a couple of things, and I went and spent a couple of hours at GOMA, the Gallery of Modern Art, which is just one of the best galleries in Australia, I reckon.
Wow.
Okay. It is so good. In fact, that whole precinct around there, the sort of South Bank precinct,
yeah, it's awesome,
is just... The library is really, brilliant, really good. Like, yeah. You should take your kids there. They're really set up for lots of great stuff for kids to do. It's a really awesome space. And then GOMA is right nearby. And it's just a really great gallery. It feels great to be inside. It's very airy and tall and spacious. And it just has – every time I've been there, there's been like an absolute winner exhibition. And I went there, I hadn't really planned before I went to Brisbane. I just looked up what was there and thought, oh, my God, I want to see both those things. So there was a Gerhard Richter exhibition there, and he's just like – he's a painter who kind of – he paints sometimes on photographs, and then sometimes he paints photographs. And he's got this kind of portraiture of the moment thing going on. Like, he's an incredibly accomplished painter. But he doesn't paint people posing. Like, he's kind of seems very opposed to the idea of a portrait trying to capture somebody or capture a truth about them. He does portraits as snapshots. So there's lots of portraits where people have got like their faces turned away, or like just sort of gazing off somewhere, or preoccupied, or reading a book or something. And there's something so beautiful about them, just very transitory, but somehow really penetrating. Anyway, it's a gorgeous exhibition, and he's got lots of more abstract things as well, which are incredibly
not
beautiful.
Portraits.
Yeah,
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 that's the work I would be familiar with.
Yeah, and then right next door they had a full exhibition by this absolutely crackers Japanese artist called Yayoi Kusama. Mm-hmm. And I saw an exhibition of hers, or no, just an installation really, or an artwork of hers when I went to GOMA with my kids like a few years back. Mm. And by coincidence, they've actually remounted it there at the moment. It is so great. So her work is all like giant, colourful kind of murals and stuffed things, and it's just she's obsessed with pumpkins. She makes rooms full of these stylized, beautiful pumpkins, and like Sounds, yep, crazy. She's really bonkers. And she sews things and makes these strange stuffed kind of sculptures, all incredibly colourful, like it's beautiful to look at. But she did something called the Obliteration Room, and it's two rooms that are like, it's like an apartment, right? So there's like a kitchen, there's a lounge suite, there's a piano, there's paintings on the walls, and like it's like a reasonably sparsely furnished apartment, but everything is white. So the whole thing, floor, furniture, paintings on the walls, piano, everything is just pure white.
Wow.
And the idea is when you go in and people are encouraged to take their kids or whatever, they hand you a sheet of stickers, like multicolored little spot stickers of different sizes, and they just say stick them wherever you want. So as more and more people go in, there's more and more stickers everywhere on the walls and on the – well, over the course of the exhibition – it gets, of course, more and more colourful until by the end there's no white space left. It's just all colour.
Wow.
And it's so cool. And the kids are just like, because there's that thrill of damaging public property.
I'm just relieved you've stopped taking your family to exhibitions of giant dildos.
I know, right? I know.
That sounds very
well,
cool.
Well, I took my daughter to see the – my four-year-old to see the Rembrandt exhibition that's on at the moment at the Art Gallery of New South Wales, which is great, by the way. Yeah, it's really great. And there's that incredible Vermeer that is the just the highlight of the exhibition, I reckon. It's sort of like a heavily Rembrandt-esque exhibition, but there's there's some other Dutch artists, and it's oh, my God, it is this beautiful painting by Vermeer of, I can't remember what it's called, Lady with a Book or something, or Blue Woman with a Book. And it's this, she's a pregnant woman, I think, which is pretty unusual in the time for a pregnant woman to be depicted, you know. And she's opening a letter or reading a letter next to a desk. There's a map hanging behind her. But the incredible – and there's two blue chairs near her. But the incredible thing is the light, you know. And it's amazing to think this thing is like 400 years old or whatever. And his capacity to capture this sort of soft and yet luminous light coming in from, you know, presumably a window. You don't know what the light source is just – absolutely thrilling. It's incredible to look at. It's
wow,
just
I should
absolutely
go and see it just
it's,
for that.
Yeah, awesome. It's really, really, really beautiful. Although, you know, my four-year-old was like, boring.
Where's so, the dildos?
Yeah, where the well, I was gonna take her to see the Robert Mapplethorpe exhibition. I thought, oh God,
oh,
no.
Oh, I wouldn't come
probably
look at that too.
That would
yeah.
be like there'd be like cloudy with a chance of dildos, I reckon.
Oh, my God. I think we just came up with the episode title
Brenda.
For this week. Brenda, clean that up. I think we'll leave it there. Let's leave you with that lovely visual courtesy of Annabelle Crabb. I just want to point out courtesy of Annabelle Crabb.
Check it out.